The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Today, we're talking to Councillor Lisa Dominato about the planning process for the 2021 budget. We're talking about what it means to have an equitable budget planning process during a pandemic when cities are going to have to make cuts. We talk specifically about the Downtown East Side, the Strathcona Tent City, and funds that affect whether services are provided in the neighborhood. Here's Lisa. Councillor Lisa Dominato, it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about this 2021 budget. So we're in the process of planning for this budget. And let's start off with the context and what's going on here. So it seems like when it rains, it pours. Now, we need money for lots of things. We have locally, we're dealing with an overdose crisis. We have affordable housing or lack of affordable housing. We're dealing with an increased global focus on racism. And then we still got to keep a focus on climate change, and then there's the pandemic to deal with on top of all of this. Okay, so not easy. And on top of that, the city is bleeding money, is what the mayor said, with people not being able to pay the property taxes. Can you sort of start off as off from like a framework structural context of how you're looking at this budget?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you've actually identified a number of issues and layers to considering the budget, because there's multiple bottom lines when it comes down to budgets, not just about dollars and cents. And one of the big lenses right now is the pandemic. I think that won't come as a surprise to you or any of your listeners, is that we have, coming into this year, no one foresaw the impact, one, the pandemic itself, but the impact it would have on all levels of government and municipalities in particular. And so, you know, we've been sitting at roughly $150 million shortfall as a city, and that's a significant amount of money. And so that's been a big lens to how do we move forward with an upcoming budget. And for your broader context, the cities are required by law to balance their budgets. And so the recent updates to council have been putting a lens on how do we mitigate that, how do we address that shortfall. And some of it has happened already through temporary layoffs. Some of it is going to come through, we have a stabilization reserve. And then we have some revenues that are now coming back with the reopening of the economy. But I think a couple of the other issues that have emerged in some of the lenses that we're applying is looking at equity. And because we've seen with the pandemic that particular individuals and communities have been harder hit as a result of the pandemic. And so having an equity and diversity lens on our budget going forward, we've also seen that with housing, is that the housing has, the pandemic has revealed some real gaps in our housing infrastructure. And when you think about the SROs in the Downtown East Side, the city, in order to protect people, took on cleaning and meals and other services in conjunction with the province. And I think that's another area that, you know, we're going to be looking at going forward. Previous government, provincial government, as well as the current provincial government, actually did a lot of investment in SROs and bringing them into the public sector. And that's something that's a sidebar, but I think that's something that should be looked at more closely in terms of having public operations of some of the SROs. But all that context is going into our budget planning. We're doing a budget survey right now that's available to the public and both online, and there's hard copies available to get people's sense of what's important to them, what should we prioritize. And I think there's just, I think a different lens being applied across the board this year than any other year. And I'm new to council, only been a year and a half. But we certainly need to ensure, you know, as a council, we have certain priorities we've already identified, which was making sure we have core services for everyone in the city, making sure that we're addressing housing, addressing climate change, vulnerable persons. And so those priorities are still there. But we are working certainly with a COVID lens.
One theme I want to touch on, Lisa, is this idea of the idea of downloading the responsibility from higher levels of government down to lower levels. We know municipal governments don't have a lot of money. I mean, yes, it is a $1.6 billion budget, but 21% of it goes to police. That's a lot of money that's not even within the hands of city budget. But there's, so I want to ask this question of how, what can the city do and what can the city not do? So to put some concreteness around that question, so let's look at the Strathcona Park issue, for example, where residents mm-hmm. are, you know, concerned, you know, for both, you know, homeless residents and both house residents are concerned. What, and this question of how are we going to get housing for folks? People are looking to municipal politicians like you. We're also looking at provincial politicians and federal. And basically everyone is tossing their hands up. Every level of government is tossing their hands up and saying, I ain't got money. Let's go to the next level of government. Mm-hmm. Provincial is doing that. Federal is just not saying all that much. But I really want to ask you this specific question of like, what can city government do and what's really within capacity of municipal governments to do and what is really, in your opinion, not within our capacity to do?
Yeah, it's a big question. And I appreciate you bringing up Strathcona because I'm hearing a lot from residents there on both sides, and they're very conflicted, the residents, around concern for wanting to ensure residents that are in, living in the park now get housing, get access to service, but then on the other side of the equation, people are concerned about public safety. And one of the things that I've been pushing for is to advance, the province has committed a navigation center for Vancouver, specifically to be an enhanced shelter with wraparound services. And I've written the premier asking for that to be expedited for the city, as well as to be to have more spaces. Right now, I think they're looking at 60 beds, 60 spaces, but to have up to 200 or maybe multiple sites. But I think that one of the levers that the city has in terms of that housing conversation is that we have land and we can leverage that land for the benefit of housing. That is something that we have been doing with the modular housing. Because I appreciate what you're saying is that there's, you know, often different levels of government involved and it becomes a bit of a finger pointing of who does what. And the city does have property taxes, has a few other sources of revenue. But certainly the province and the federal governments have a role to play in helping deliver on that. The city can leverage its land. It can make the regulatory process smoother and faster for building housing as well, with both social housing, rental housing. And that's certainly something I think we need to be looking at. So there are certain tools in our toolbox. But I also think fundamentally we have to be working all together and rowing in the same direction, whether it is housing, whether it's the opiate overdose crisis. And I'm calling right now on a provincial, federal, municipal task force specifically around mental health and addictions, because it's one thing to talk about money. Okay, well, we could just, people talk about, well, you just need to invest more money or you need to review the money to start going in. But sometimes it's actually about coordinating those services. And are we actually coordinating our approach to these issues adequately? There is a expert panel coming forward, I believe it's this year, on housing affordability that's been established, provincial, federal, municipal, and we'll see what they come forward with. But I fundamentally think we will get to better outcomes when we have all different levels of government working together and working in collaboration and with some urgency. And with the mental health and addictions, I think we absolutely need some urgency there as well.
Okay, let's leave that point for a moment. And then let's talk about this idea of, I want to talk about COVID 2.0. When COVID 2.0 hits. And I want to talk specifically about funding organizations in the downtown east side. And I know that a lot of, for a lot of organizations, okay, let's start with operating for now. The city doesn't do that much, to my understanding, provide that much operating funding for nonprofit organizations. But what I've been hearing from folks is that as they've been really relying on the philanthropy sector, and a lot of philanthropists and donors have been stepping up. But what we do know is that donor fatigue is a thing, and we can expect mm-hmm. that. And if COVID, people have been incredibly generous, and the city's heart is certainly in the right place. And when COVID 2.0 comes, and when all these donors are fatigued, and we're not, and nonprofit organizations, specifically in the neighborhood, need money to run, Is the city, being mindful of the city's limited resources and all that, what can the nonprofit organizations look to the city? Where can they go and what are your thoughts for that? And just this is being mindful of trying to look past even the short-term crisis and look at what's coming in the next few months. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, no, it's a really great question. I do think we need to be thinking beyond just, you know, the immediate, because I think we're not out of the woods when it comes to COVID. And we've obviously had to do things differently at the city. And going forward, we're going to have to continue to have that lens on our operations. The subject of grants, or I guess nonprofits, and sort of, I think you're right, the nonprofit sector does an incredible amount of work in supporting our communities. I was the chair of the Kettle Society here in Vancouver, supports people with mental illness and housing. We had some core service supports in terms of funding from the federal government, the provincial government, from the city, and then we fundraised the balance. And yet, provide really critical infrastructure to the city in terms of housing and other services. One of the things that council did earlier this year was we decided that, well, you know, we didn't know what our budget was going to look like in light of COVID. We still went forward with our community and social service grants. We agreed as a council that it was a priority to continue with those grants. And we actually gave a lot of flexibility to the organizations receiving grants, applying for them, to pivot and adapt to use the funds for things related to COVID, because obviously we want to be responsive. And at times they had applied prior to COVID saying, well, we want to use the money for X. And now we're in a situation where we want to use the money for Y. And staff recommended, and I think rightly so, that we needed to have some flexibility built into those grants so that organizations could make the shifts necessary to serve their clients and organizations. And council decided as well, and I think this is what's really telling about the council as a whole, was that it was our belief that those services are vital to our community and our communities across the city, but particularly around the downtown east side, that we felt compelled that those grants should go ahead regardless of what our financial circumstances were. We didn't know where we were going to be, still don't know exactly where we're going to be, but we said these are going to be a priority. We're going to distribute these funds. And I think that was an important signal that we're there to support the nonprofit sector.
Let me ask a little more about that, Lisa. And I'm coming from that with an understanding, and also I hear a lot of appreciation from folks in the neighborhood, organizations in the neighborhood, of what the city has done. And I'm looking at the update from staff, from city staff, in, I believe this was the June release, where city staff was putting their budget assumptions around a return to pre-COVID city revenues levels by January 2021. Comes, we get revenues are back to normal, and an increase in city revenues of 2% between 2021 to 2025. All that is to say, it looks like to me, in my mind, there's not a lot of buffer room or wiggle room here for additional negative impacts. Mm-hmm. I want to put to you what the probability in your head of that scenario is, and what we can do to prevent that from actually coming to pass.
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. And I appreciate that, because I think we do need to be thinking further out. And when I read the report and we had the staff presentation, my reaction was that that seems a bit overly optimistic around the revenues coming up back to levels that they've been. And I actually asked some of those questions in council about how likely is that. And because I think what we're finding right now, as we're seeing, is there's now some increases in cases where there's some concerns about it being on the rise, concerns about a second wave, which is what you're pointing to. And so we certainly need to be thoughtful, and I think we need to be prudent and careful in terms of our budgeting, which is part of the reason we actually asked for a review of our capital. I know we've been talking about operating, but in fact, I think in this budget, $50 to $55 million was allocated in this budget to our capital budget from operating. And we've asked staff to go and review all of our capital projects to identify, are there any of those projects that can maybe be paused, maybe slowed down, are not urgent, because that's cash flow that we may need access to fill some of the gaps that you've identified. And so staff are going to be coming back this fall with that report around the capital budget, because it does have a bearing and an impact on our operating dollars. And so that we may find some flexibility in there is that staff come back and say, well, we need to pause and defer some of these capital projects because we need the cash flow going forward. We also have a stabilization reserve as well that all cities are required to have. And we have been prudent in putting money into that every year. as it's like your rainy day fund. Just like you have, you're renting an apartment, you own a home, you have to have, you know, so we do have access resources, but it's certainly, if things were to suddenly worsen, we would be reevaluating, and then you have to make choices and decisions. And that's the challenge of governing is, and that's why we're soliciting input right now to say what's important to people and how do we prioritize. But I think the one thing is that we have asked every way along throughout this process is to give us updates. Where are we at? What can we manage? What can we defer? But how do we ensure that we can protect the things that are important?
I want to ask you a bit about this Revenue Stabilization Fund. And give me, we don't have to go into details for a bit, but just a brief overview. Seems a little bit like a sort of a magical fund, this Revenue Stabilization Fund that I've seen indicated in city staff reports that we can pull money out of. How much actually is there, isn't there, and how much are we able to pull out and still leave a little bit for whatever else comes next?
Yeah, it's in the multi-millions, but it's the reason that we have it is exactly that, is we're asking about a buffer. Some of that reserve, I think it's roughly $50 million this year, is going to be allocated towards the budget to help balance the budget. So some of the measures that we're already employing is that we have had temporary layoffs, and those were put in place early on. We've had furloughs with our executives and management. We've deferred some things. We're looking at capital. But I would say that this is very standard practice, is to have a reserve fund. Provincially, I work provincially as well, and there is always a reserve there. And then we've always had reserves as well at the city for things like weather, you know, climate changes and, you know, snow. But it's not a never ending pot, right? And so typically what happens with municipal governments is when they do draw on those stabilization reserves, is the intent is that every budget you replenish or you add to it, so that again, if you end up with another, like you say, a COVID 2.0 or some other, we could have, you know, another event, an earthquake or something like that, you have something to draw on. And that's very standard practice for municipal and provincial federal governments to have reserve funds of some kind.
I want to ask you about a specific question about a specific grant that the city provides, and that's the capital grant program for the Downtown East Side. And in previous years, that grant was the program cap was $100,000 for the entire program, and this year it's gone down to $50,000 across the neighborhood. What's the balance here between the city being strapped for cash, and I think I'm looking for both a higher level answer that you have talked about a little bit in your previous answer, and also specific response about this specific grant. Having that fund cut from $100,000 down to $50,000 means that there will be nonprofit organizations, $50,000 less floating around the neighborhood for capital improvements, which, as we know, we have to, as important as this crisis is, we have to look forward past this crisis and ask ourselves where we want to be after this. And for some of these organizations, it could be fairly significant detriment to their operations if they aren't able to receive these capital grants. So I want to put out there, what do you see about the specific future of this fund? The size of this specific grant, and your just slightly broader thoughts about balancing assisting organizations in a difficult time when the city is already strapped for resources. Maybe elaborate more on what you said previously.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I actually recall when this grant came to council for approval and some of the improvements that were for different organizations in the Downtown East Side. And while they might seem small to people looking from the outside, they're actually, it was really clear to me, they're really significant to those organizations. And I see the benefit to that. And, I think it's something that we can certainly look at as part of the budget process as we go forward here, and something I can bring back to our staff as part of our deliberations is the feedback that's coming from the community about that grant program and the value of it. I think that's certainly something we can look at. And I think that it speaks to another sort of conversation we touched on earlier, is about is there any interplay around with the provincial and federal governments as well in terms of some of the capital? But certainly I think that when we review the budget this year and get feedback, certainly we should look at that.
And I would love to ask you many more questions, Lisa, including on capital, on the capital portion of the budget, which, as you said, we haven't touched on much yet. But maybe one of my last questions is around the procurement process for the city. I've talked to a number of social enterprises around the city, and one question you've been asking is, does the city, or how much of a city of a focus does the city have on having a social enterprise first procurement policy? Because we know that we all need businesses for profit all across the spectrum, all kinds of businesses are great for our community. And also social enterprises have a specific lens on using their numbers, going out and looking at the community and saying, how can we spend this money really to the benefit of the people we serve? And does the city, can you speak a little bit about the current procurement approach in mm-hmm. of the city currently in regards to social enterprises and how that may change or not change in the future?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually, because procurement, I think, and I'll speak broadly, first of all, from my own experience provincially, because I dealt with contracts provincially and procurement provincially, and I'm really seeing it shift from a place where some procurement is very much based on the financial bottom line. And I actually, what I'm seeing in the public sector is a real shift from, it's not just about the best tender that comes in, but are there sustainable practices? Are we, is it eco-friendly? I feel there's a different perspective being brought into procurement and track record organizations have. But to your point, about social enterprise, I've been able to see a few social enterprises in practice, and I've been really and I wish I could remember the one right now. It's a food one. It's tied to connected to Coast Mental Health, and fantastic opportunities, and I think there's real positive benefit. And I can't speak to the specifics right now about whether that lens is being applied in our procurement practice today. But I do recall that this has come up at council as a consideration, and I will certainly take it away and raise it with our staff. I just can't recall off the top of my head right now, but I'm certain that it has come up in broader conversations that we've had about procurement, and I do see a shift there, but I'll certainly bring it back to our staff as a question that we are getting, and your listeners are bringing up and people you're speaking with, because I think it's really important, and they provide a great value, quality, but really positive contributions for individuals who are able to be part of those social enterprises, as well as similar to some of our supported employment programs, certain opportunities to build skills and esteem. And so there's a lot of benefits, I think, is what I'm trying to say. And so I'll take that away and certainly talk to our staff about it further.
Lisa, thank you so much. And we really look forward to hearing more about the budget 2021 process.
Certainly. Yeah. And thank you for the time. I appreciate it today.
Take care, Lisa.
Thank you.
And that was Councillor Lisa Dominato about the planning process for the 2021 budget. We talked about what it means to have an equitable budget planning process during the pandemic, when cities are going to have to make cuts. We talked specifically about the downtowning side, the tent city, and funds that affect whether or not services are provided in the neighborhood. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, your independent daily news show, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy. Take care and happy Friday.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.